Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Brian, who has a well-deserved day off. For our next segment, have you ever wondered what exactly goes on in a hospital right after a baby is born? These moments can be beautiful, exhausting, perhaps terrifying, and some human rights advocates say unethical. In New Jersey, the Department of Health is facing a lawsuit regarding how infant blood samples may be used after a baby is born. Some human rights advocates are concerned that how the state uses newborn blood samples may violate the Constitution. Here to discuss this issue are Dana DeFilippo, senior reporter at the New Jersey Monitor, a new nonprofit news outlet in the Garden State that you all should check out, and C.J. Griffin, an attorney at Pashmanstein Walder Hayden and director of the firm's Justice Gary S. Stein Public Interest Center. Dana and C.J., thanks for joining me and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Dana, you've been reporting on this issue in New Jersey, but it's really a national issue in scope. Could you just begin by explaining what this is all about? What goes on in a hospital after a baby is born, and what happens in that moment that has civil liberties advocates so concerned?
Sure. So that it's kind of anybody who's ever had a child knows what a kind of crazy time that is. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you don't have a child, you probably can imagine. But anyway, one of the things that hospitals do is test for a number of genetic diseases. And so they do that by pricking the heel of a newborn baby, usually within 24 to 48 hours of the birth. Every hospital does this. Every state has a program like this. Most of the programs, if not all of them, are mandatory. They supposedly ask you for your consent. I mean, I had two kids. I don't remember that, but it's such a crazy,
sure,
chaotic
you
time.
Sign a lot of things. You right. Probably sign something. Yeah.
Right. And so every state does that. New Jersey's been doing it since 1977. But what a lot of parents, and probably few parents, if any, know is that these states then keep those blood samples, and they call them blood spots because they put them on a paper and it's literally a spot of blood. Anyway, they keep those blood spots for, varying lengths of times. It depends on what state that you live in, depending on how long. In New Jersey, it's 23 years. And then after they store them, and then they do other things with them. And that also depends on what state you're in. In some states, they do medical research on them. And other states, they might use them like Michigan, for example. One of the ways they use it is for crime victim identification. If they have a body and they have no idea who it is, maybe they would go to these blood spots to see if they can find a genetic match. Hmm. But the problem arises is that when you're in this kind of fog of childbirth, that you don't know that they're storing this blood work, that you don't know that they're using it or all the ways they could be using it. And so that's really where the concerns arise.
And then one of the ways they could use it is to solve a crime. Advocates became concerned after an infant's DNA was used to incriminate the child's father. Dana, can you explain that story for us?
Sure. So this came out of a case by the New Jersey State Police. It was something that the State Office of the Public Defender discovered in defending someone, that the state police had used one of these blood spots to link someone to a 1996 sexual assault. And they were like, wait a minute, because the way this kind of crime investigation should work is that they should develop probable cause, and then they should, seek DNA evidence that way, a DNA match directly, or DNA evidence directly from the whoever they suspect. Hmm. But in this case, they used the blood spot to link this guy to this crime. And that's a concern because, this crime happened back in 1996. The child in question wasn't even born then. He's nine now. And so it's just a use that, parents who have kids and would normally consent to this, you know, this kind of health testing. Who doesn't want to know if your child is healthy or not, right? But if you then find out, oh, well, they also might in, 10, 15 years use that to get you for a crime. You know, that's something that that I think has raised a lot of hackles among the among civil rights people, sure. But also should among anyone, right? Anyone.
Yeah, yeah. It's really wild. Listeners, are there any parents out there who want to weigh in about this? Have you thought about how your child's DNA could be used and stored by the government? Let us know what you think about the issue. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And if you have any questions about DNA privacy, we can float those to our guests as well. 212-433-WNYC or tweet at Brian Lehrer. So, CJ, you've now sued over this. You're a prominent attorney in the state. Tell me about your case.
Sure. So we are representing Dana's organization, New Jersey Monitor, as well as the Office of Public Defender, in a public records lawsuit seeking to learn more about the scope of this use by law enforcement agencies without the consent or knowledge of parents. And so both the Monitor as well as the Office of Public Defender filed records requests with the newborn screening laboratory, simply asking for the number of subpoenas that they have received from law enforcement agencies over the past 5 years or so. The goal is not to learn about any specific case at this point or to identify any particular investigations, but rather just to learn how expansive this use is has been going on and which agencies are doing it, both because we think the public has a right to know, but also because the public defender's office wants to better defend their clients. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, despite both of these clients telling the screening lab that they didn't need to produce the actual subpoenas, that they could instead just tell them how many subpoenas there are, or that they could completely redact all identifying information from the subpoenas, the newborn lab still denied access to them. So there's just this complete secrecy around this use by law enforcement, and it's very troubling. So we sued. The case is currently pending. We're hoping for a decision in October at this point.
And why is the state saying, what is the state's argument that this is private information, that, you know, once you give us your once you literally give us your baby's blood, we don't have to tell you what we're doing with it or how we're using it?
So the basis for the denial was that these are grand jury records and grand juries are shrouded in complete secrecy.
Okay.
That's unfortunately, in our opinion, not true. They cited the court rules surrounding grand jury secrecy, which really just apply to grand jurors and prosecutors and court staff and transcribers and that sort of people in the proceeding. But it expressly doesn't apply to witnesses. And so I'm sure as reporters, both of you have spoken with many witnesses or recipients of grand jury subpoenas, and they can freely speak to the press. And you know, you can Google and find a gazillion stories about grand jury subpoenas and grand jury testimony as a result. So it doesn't prohibit the state lab from giving us the subpoenas, and it certainly doesn't prohibit them from telling us how many they received or giving them to us with redaction so that we don't, you know who's the target of the investigation or that sort of thing.
Right. And CJ, do you know what the laws are in other states, in New York? Is New Jersey different in terms of the way they hold this blood and then also the lack of information they provide about it?
So I haven't done expansive research on that, but I have, first I'll say as a parent, I knew nothing about this program, and it's not required in our statute for parents to actually have informed consent. So some parents might be notified and some may not. So I learned about this, even though I'm a parent, for the first time when I started working on this case. But there are states with varying records retention schedules and varying allowable uses. So Virginia's Department of Health website says that they will not allow the blood to be used for anything other than the health purpose that it's intended to be used for, and that they only store it for 6 months. Texas's website tells you exactly how it could be used and that they will destroy it after 2 years unless you voluntarily opt in for a longer retention schedule. I didn't see anything at all about retention of these samples on the New Jersey Department of Health's website. I instead had to do all this legal research to try to figure out what the retention schedule was. And in some obscure public records retention schedule, I found that it was 23 years. So I think that's problematic and rather shocking. And then I don't, you know, I question the legality of law enforcement using the newborn lab. The statute that creates this program says that the blood samples can be used by the Department of Health and agencies designated for the purpose of carrying out the program. And then it says that the samples are otherwise confidential and should not be divulged or made public in any way that would disclose the identity of any other person. So it's problematic, you know, and I think we need to hear more from the state as to how this program law enforcement use is allowable.
Yeah.
And perhaps we'll hear that in defense of this lawsuit that we filed.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm WNYC reporter Matt Katz filling in for Brian today. And if you're just joining us and wondering what in the world we're talking about, my guests are Dana DeFilippo, senior reporter at the New Jersey Monitor, and CJ Griffin, an attorney at Pashman Stein Walder Hayden. And we're talking about how newborn health screenings that collect infants' blood can apparently be used in police investigations in New Jersey. And we're talking about the implications of that for privacy and civil liberties. Dana, you reported that a similar case in Michigan could have implications for this practice in New Jersey. What's the case there, and what does that mean for folks in New Jersey?
Sure. There's a civil rights attorney there by the name of Philip Ellison, and he actually discovered this as a parent. His wife had a baby in 2017, and they're in the hospital, and it's crazy. And they said, can you sign this form for the blood work? And he's like, you mean, I've already signed forms. I'm not sure, you know, like you're coming to me every 15 minutes and I've signed 100,000 forms. And they're like, oh no, this isn't for us. This is for the state of Michigan. And he's a civil rights attorney. So he's like, excuse me. So, that's kind of how it started. He started by fighting his own battle to protect the privacy of his son's, DNA. And, so a few months after his son was born in the fall of 2017, he filed a case there, challenging this. He's had a number of other parents sign on to it. He has state and federal, lawsuits going. The state lawsuit is kind of on hold and pending the federal case. So he had asked for, his son's blood spots to be removed from storage and any use for whatever they want to use it for. And because that's the state case that was stayed, that's kind of on hold. So his son's now four and he still has no idea whether the state still has his son's blood spots and how they may have been used in that time. So it's a little bit of a crazy case. He has a number of objections that he's voiced kind of in the lawsuit. And when I talked to him about it, you know, there's any number of civil rights that kind of are in question here. One is the right to privacy, right? When you give blood for a specific purpose, you know, another right is the right to bodily autonomy. So when you give blood for a specific purpose, it's problematic then if it would be used for anything beyond what you thought it was being used for. And then, you know, here in New Jersey, the specific issue is the civil rights issue in question is the right to be free of warrantless search and seizure. So there's a number of kind of things going on here and reasons why people are concerned.
And we actually have a caller with yet another concern. Mohammed in Nassau County. Hey there, Mohammed. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
What's your concern here?
Yeah, so I have a child that was born in Michigan in 2020. And I'm concerned. My concern is that can the U.S., should I be concerned about the U.S. using it for counterterrorism purposes, given the fact that I myself, you know, have, you know, been profiled by every federal agency in the U.S. should I be concerned about the American government terrorism towards our community? Can they use these the DNA and the blood samples to go after our children, given the fact that some of our children have been, you know, targeted by drones, whether in Yemen or in Afghanistan? I'm talking about American citizens. So that's my concern, whether we should be worried about U.S. government or to use the blood samples and go after our children.
Thank you, Mohammed. I appreciate that question. I guess CJ, what do you think about that? I mean, I guess any community that has felt that they've been historically targeted by the government and law enforcement, like the Muslim community in America, is probably more concerned about this kind of thing than others, right?
Yes, absolutely. A variety of communities should be concerned. Actually, I think all of us should be concerned. But the problem with many of these statutes and these programs is that there aren't constitutional safeguards built into them. So in New Jersey's statute, although it does say that they should only be used for the purpose, you know, the health screening purpose, evidently, the newborn screening lab is just responding to simple subpoenas by a law enforcement agency and not even requiring a court order or a search warrant. And so we need those safeguards in place. We need legislatures to define exactly what the use it can be, to require informed consent, both for the blood draw as well as the retention, to allow parents to opt out of the retention if they so desire, or to be able to demand destruction of the blood sample. But, you know, a simple transparency and constitutional safeguards here are very important. We don't know the scope of this problem, which is why we filed our lawsuit in New Jersey. I think once we have some more information, then there'll be additional demands for legislative change.
CJ, can you explain the role of the Fourth Amendment here? The New Jersey Public Defender alleges that New Jersey's use of the infant blood samples breaches the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. Can you explain that argument?
Yeah, sure. So the Fourth Amendment protects people from unreasonable search and seizures. So generally, to obtain a DNA sample from someone, the law enforcement agencies would have to develop probable cause and go to a judge and present that information. And a judge would have to sign a search warrant to collect a DNA sample. Here, they're sort of skirting that. They're using public databases that collect DNA and investigate genetic research companies to use those databases to gather to run samples through to try to narrow down at least to a family. In this case, they narrowed it down to a family and could identify that the sample would have belonged to one of the children of this couple or one of the children's offsprings. And then they use that data that they obtained from these public genetic databases to then just serve a simple grand jury subpoena upon the newborn lab. The newborn lab evidently voluntarily produced it without, you know, questioning that process anyway. And then once they alleged that they had some sort of match there, then they use that information to then go to the judge and say, hey, based on all this information, we now have probable cause. Mm-hmm. So they didn't initially have probable cause. They use these other outside sources and then argued that they had it. And so that's extremely problematic and we believe violates the Fourth Amendment and the New Jersey Constitution.
Dan, in your reporting, you also mentioned other states where law enforcement has come under pressure for using and storing just DNA unethically. So California, here in New York. Can you discuss a couple of those situations that don't necessarily involve blood per se, but DNA?
Sure. So Texas, for example, well, this is blood, but Texas used the blood spots. This was about 10, 15 years ago to create a DNA database for crime fighting, crime investigation purposes. That was challenged and they lost because, you know, again, it's this creeping use of these blood spots for things that they weren't authorized for. Michigan uses them for for crime fighting in terms of not really crime fighting, but crime investigation, if they have missing people. Beyond crime fighting, there's another concern that in Michigan, for example, some of these blood spots, the state sells them to for-profit companies for research. So, you know, when you're asking parents or you're trying to get an informed consent from parents on these things, it's one thing to say, hey, can we take your child's blood to test for disease? But then when you start saying things like, well, can we also take it to research medical diseases in our whole community? Can we sell it to Johnson & Johnson so they can do research on it? Can we keep it so that, you know, 10 years down the line, it might be able to help us as we investigate crimes? You know, that's really where the problems come in. And the secrecy is key here, because in most of these states, they're so secretive about it, you don't know how they're using it. And so that's really the problem here. If they didn't have anything to hide, then they should tell us how they're using these spots. And in all of these states where there have been challenges, that's why there were challenges, because they weren't being transparent about it. And so people had to sue to find out what was happening.
Are there suits in those other states, CJ?
There have been, yes.
And could that affect what happens in New Jersey? Or is that kind of every state is, in lieu of any sort of federal rule or regulation on this, every state kind of makes their own decisions, I guess, right?
Yeah, CJ,
you're there.
Yeah, I think what happens in other states can be informative, and certainly it was informative in our research for this case. I don't know that it would legally impact what happens in New Jersey, unless there was some sort of federal claim that was ultimately under the federal constitution that was ultimately decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. And I'm not sure if they have those sort of claims, but
sure.
I think what's extra problematic here is really, this is a mandatory program. The state has no obligation to tell you that they're collecting the blood. If you somehow are told or you otherwise know, you have no ability to opt out of it unless you can prove that you have a religious reason for doing so. And then once they take the blood, you have no ability to say that they can't keep it for 23 years. So, I have a 13-year-old son. Evidently, his blood will be stored for 10 more years. And to me, that's deeply problematic. And I think it would be for many parents.
It's a incredible story. I really appreciate both of you bringing this to light and bringing this story to us. My guests have been Dana DeFilippo, senior reporter at the New Jersey Monitor, and CJ Griffin, an attorney at Pashman Stein, Walder Hayden, and director of the firm's Justice Gary S. Stein Public Interest Center. Dana and CJ, thank you so much. We'll be following your reporting and this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.